Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, exploring the issues that impact our community, providing an in-depth analysis of the latest national discussion, and hitting the issues hard in a thoughtful, passionate, and provocative way. We have another thought-provoking show for you this morning in the last installment of our three-part series, The Movements and Voices of the African Diaspora. We're going to explore the spoken word. In part one of our series, we highlighted the brilliant work and genius of African and African-American historians Sheikh Anta Diop, Dr. Yosef Benyakinen, Dr. John Henrik Clark, Dr. Chancellor Williams, and Ivan Van Sertima. Last week, in part two of our series, we explored the liberation and independence movements that swept across Africa and other parts of the African diaspora, including the Caribbean and the United States. This morning, we're going to immerse ourselves into the spoken word and explore how poetry, prose, essays, and oral traditions undergirded Black consciousness in the United States and the entire African diaspora. This morning, the movements and voices of the African diaspora as seen through our spoken word revolutionaries here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Greetings, everybody. My name is Ntandoya Maswazi Kupeka. I am a grade 3 learner at Hlabana Primary School. I am here to say a poem about our country, Africa. I am saying this poem because I feel it in my blood. South Africa is a beautiful country. Beautiful sunshines. Okay. Africa, my continent. Africa, my home. From the high mountains of Kilimanjaro to the low valleys, the villages of the north, to the rivers of the south, the black tribes that dwell in thee. I salute you, Africa, for making me who I am, an African. I am an African. I respect, I speak African languages, and I am proud of these languages. The color of my skin is rich, dark like milled coffee, and I am beautiful like a young impala. I am an African, a fearless person with dignity and respect, and strong as a lion, clever as a monkey. I am the river that flows, and all those who are thirsty can drink. They drink knowledge and perseverance. I am an African, a leader, but not a follower. There is no one like me. I am smart and good-looking. I am an African. I thank you.
What an inspiration. That was a poem from our young South African sister who is going to be what I believe an extraordinary poet, Ntando Kubeka. At her young age, she captures the essence of African beauty, whether it's the mountainous landscape of Mount Kilimanjaro or the beauty of our dark skin, to the landscape of the continent, to the rich and varied traditions of the African diaspora. And that is the beauty of the written and spoken word. Firmly a fix to any liberation movement is articulation and expression. It could be a flowery and beautiful prose that takes the mind eye on a beautiful journey of abstraction, hyperbole, and metaphoric utterances, or a hard trip that spills the harsh reality of racism, discrimination, unfair systems that tower over classes of people and undermine their ability to live free. In these words and expressions, you'll discover a willingness to fight injustice with words and language that grabs the heart and arrests the mind. Such expressions came from the late Amiri Baraka. Take a listen.
Prophets become prophets. Reveals religion, give way to capitalism. obscene rich mother who up the world for money, who took slaves and enslaved Africa for money. They have no God but money. Education is to make money, books and cars made first for money. No book publishing or movie making except for money. They have killed and lied and raped and repressed, enslaved and butchered, disinformated and had niggas castrated for money. Lynched and destroyed, opposed beauty and evolution, focus of a revolution for money. They threaten to kill us, everything for money. They f*** up the water, kill fish and birds, radioactively annihilate public and secret millions for money. They have no God, no perceived good, but money. Sin is poverty, outsiders, creativity, not from Europe. No God, nothing they would live or die for but money. Remember the OJs when they first were sure said it was money, Lowell Fuller, James Brown. Jesus said it was impossible for a rich man to be good, no camels pass through, no needles eyes. Why God and the prophets of the ancient world condemned the worship of Baal, the golden calf, animalism glorified. They have no God, no perceived good, but money, no God, nothing they would live or die for, but money.
Poetry. Prose and the written and spoken word is about experiences. It's about seeing life, living life, dreading life, celebrating life, and pulling together and cobbling together and stringing together and tying together a tapestry of words and utterances and gestures and moans and gyrations and shouts that stir the spirit. And when we consider the liberation movements that swept across the globe, the tradition of oral expression gave the people of the African diaspora the tool we needed to inspire generations of freedom fighters and liberation seekers, whether through the freedom songs that inspired us to overcome, or the urgent coded language in a melody that inspired slaves to swing low and board a chariot to carry us to freedom. It's the brilliant expression of words that light the fire. Whether those words are expressed here, abroad, or in the hemisphere south of the land of the free and home of the brave, the United States, the spoken word is not bound by one language. Take a listen to Kwame Dawes, born in Ghana, raised in Jamaica.
Tornado child, tornado child, tornado child. I'm a tornado child. I come like a swirl of black and darken up your day. I whip it all up into my womb, lift you and your things, carry you where you've never been. And maybe if I feel good, I might bring you back all warm and scared, heart humming wild like a bird after early sudden flight. 'Cause I'm a tornado child. I tremble at the elements. When thunder rolls, my mother womb trembles, remembering the tweak of contractions that tightened to a wail when my mother pushed me out into the black of a tornado night. I'm a tornado child. You can tell us from far by the crazy of our hair. Couldn't tame it if we tried. Even now I tie a bandana to silence the din of anarchy in these kaya thick plaits. 'Cause I'm a tornado child, born in the whirl of clouds. The center crumbled, then I came. My lovers know the blast of my chaotic giving. They tremble at the whip of my supple thighs. Tornado child, you cross me at your peril. I cling to light when the warm of anger lashes me into a spin. The pine trees bend to me, swept in my gyrations. 'Cause I'm a tornado child. And when the spirit takes my head, I hurtle into the vacuum of white sheets billowing and paint a swirl of color streaked with my many songs. 'Cause I am a tornado child.
The brilliance of the spoken word is to peer through the fog of confusion, nonsense, peering through political machinations and the matrix of social constructs that often leaves people aimlessly going through life without seeing the big picture, without seeing the problems, without the seeing the despair, the ugliness, the environments that harm the mind and disrupt the spirit, the everyday stuff where life is just, well, ain't no crystal stair. Mother to Son by Langston Hughes. Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
It's had tacks in it, and splinters, and boards torn up, and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time, I's been a-climbing on, and reaching landings, and turning corners, and sometimes going in the dark, where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set down on the steps, 'cause you finds it kinda hard. Don't you fall now, for I's still going, honey. I's still climbing. And life for me ain't been no crystal stair. When there are questions about the deep and perfect beauty of black women, or appreciating the dark hue in which melanin helps to protect us from the sun, or appreciating the broadness of our nose, the fullness of our lips, or the thickness of our hips, our kinky hair, our long, strong stride and cool gait, the poets, the writers, the spoken word geniuses found a way to bolster the appreciation of our beautiful black skin. Here's Gwendolyn Bennett. It, dark girl, I love you for your brownness and the rounded darkness of your breast. I love you for the breaking sadness in your voice and shadows where your wayward eyelids rest. Something of old forgotten queens lurks in the life abandoned of your walk, and something of the shackled slave sobs in the rhythm of your talk. Oh, little brown girl, born of sorrow's mate, keep all you have of queenliness, forgetting that you were once a slave, and let your full lips laugh at fate. Here's Angela Wild Kremke. There is a tree by day that at night has a shadow, a hand huge and black, with fingers long and black, all through the dark, against the white man's house, in the little wind. The black hand plucks and plucks at the bricks. The bricks are the color of blood and very small. Is it a black hand, or is it a shadow? And here's Albert Rice, the Black Madonna. Not as the white nations know thee, O mother, but swarthy of cheek and full-lipped as the child races are. Yet thou art she, the immaculate maid, and none other, crowned in the stable at Bethlehem, held of the star. See where they come, thy people so humbly appealing, from the ancient lands where the olden faiths had birth. Tired, dusky hands uplifted for thy healing. Pity them, mother, the untaught of earth. When the slave master exercised complete control over his stock of female slaves, the black man had no choice but to comply. Sure, there were instances where black men, seeing their wives dragged off to be raped by the slave master, were so overcome with rage that the butchered body of the slave master was buried to never be discovered again. The penalty exercised on the entire plantation of slaves was brutal and deadly. The black woman had to convince her man that the deadly consequences of his interference would jeopardize the stability of the family. After all, being whipped, beaten, maimed, handicapped, or sold off was much worse than the slobbering and drunken moments of pleasure the slave master found between the dark legs of his slaves. The vestiges of systematic rape and control of the black family is found in the social construct in the Jim Crow South, and wormed its way through the turbulent moments of the 60s and 70s, forcing the black woman to find a stronger, more aggressive voice to fight a system that attempts to once again tear apart the black family. So emerging from the doldrums of despair, discrimination, police brutality, subservience, and second-class citizenship was the voice and articulation of our pain, the black woman. Yeah, it was the writings. Yes, the writings, the articulations, the moans, the screams, the verbal lashings, the cries, the wails, the pleas, the tears, and then the anger, the rage, the frustration that weighed down the spirit of the black woman, that gave rise to a voice that would forever change the landscape of the written and spoken word. Yeah, there was Sojourner Truth. She told the truth. Phyllis Wheatley confounded her captors and slave masters for how such beautiful words would fall from those black lips. Ida B. Wells' journalistic brilliance provided the written genius that helped to fight the horrors of lynching and the unabated brutality of the Ku Klux Klan and the mobs that found joy in hanging and burning black men on a tree. Whether it was through the rigors of slavery, segregation, the Jim Crow South, the turbulent 70s, or the Harlem Renaissance, it was the black woman who found her voice in the written and spoken word. Arna Boltemps, Alice Walker, Toni Morrison, Maya Angelou, Zora Neale Hurston, Alice Dunbar Nelson, Ann Spencer, Georgia Douglas Johnson, Blanche Taylor Dickinson, Gwendolyn Bennett, Gladys Hayard, and Helen Johnson, and so, so many more. Here's one of my favorites, Nikki Giovanni.
I was born in the Congo. I walked to the Fertile Crescent and built the Sphinx. I designed a pyramid so tough that a star that only glows every 100 years falls into the center, giving divine perfect light. I am bad. I sat on the throne drinking nectar with Allah. I got hot and sent an ice age to Europe to cool my thirst. My oldest daughter is Nefertiti. The tears from my birth pains created the Nile. I am a beautiful woman. I gazed on the forest and burned out the Sahara Desert. With a packet of goat's meat and a change of clothes, I crossed it in 2 hours. I am a gazelle, so swift, you can't catch me. For a birthday present, when he was 3, I gave my son Hannibal an elephant. He gave me Rome for Mother's Day. My strength flows ever on. My son Noah built Newark, and I stood proudly at the helm as we sailed on a soft summer day. I turned myself into myself and was Jesus. Men intoned my loving name. All praises, I am the one who would save. I sow diamonds in my backyard. My bowels deliver uranium. The filings from my fingernails are semi-precious jewels. On a trip north, I caught a cold and blew my nose, giving oil to the Arab world. I am so hip, even my errors are correct. I sailed west to reach east and had to round off the earth as I went. The hair from my head thinned and gold was laid across 3 continents. I am so perfect, so divine, so ethereal, so surreal, I cannot be comprehended except by my permission. I mean, I can fly like a bird in the sky.
And when we consider the struggles of the entire African diaspora and how we survived the arduous journey of life, especially where captivity and bondage was a harsh 200 plus year reality, who better to turn back the clock and give us a vivid picture of what it must have been like to be captured souls taken from the warm embrace of the motherland and broken? Here's Alice Walker, Broken Things.
I will keep broken things. The big clay pot with raised iguanas chasing their tails. Two of their fierce heads sheared off. I will keep broken things. The old slave market basket brought to my door by Mississippi. A jagged hole gouged in its sturdy, dark oak side. I will keep broken things. The memory of those long, delicious night swims with you. I will keep broken things. In my house, there remains an honored shelf on which I will keep broken things. Their beauty is, they need not ever be fixed. I will keep your wild, free laughter, though it is now missing its reassuring and graceful hinge. I will keep broken things. Thank you so much. I will keep broken things. I will keep you, pilgrim of sorrow. I will keep myself.
The words, the desperation, the pain, the harsh and stark reality of bondage, the broken things, the ability to see the beauty through pain, hardship, and despair, the ability to gaze through abstract or find metaphor in melody or capture the spirit of words and song through gesture and gyration, the ability to express, to speak, to utter, puckering the lips, moving those hips, swaying with harmonic tones and riffs of the piano key, stomping with the drum beat of revolution. The spoken and written word is a beautiful thing, buttressed by the jazzy sounds of a saxophone, the melodic sounds of a flute, or the beat of the conga drum. The words dance the dance of rhythm and purpose and hope and triumph. This is the beauty of the written and spoken word, whether it's poetry, prose, essay form, a beautiful sonnet, or the written articulation of a journalist efforting to make a difference. The written and spoken word is a beautiful thing. Here's a piece I wrote, which is germane to the three-part series, The Movements and Voices of the African Diaspora, and it is a reflection of my desire to see our story told in a holy and magnificent way. Children of Africa, where is your Bible? I often wonder why we see God through the eyes, experience, and books of other people, namely Israel. Do we not have our own story to tell about our experience with the divine? Isn't our story worthy to be on the pages of a leather-bound book found in the back of church pews? Aren't we a delivered people? Isn't our oral traditions replete with fantastic stories of miracles, phenomena, and supernatural intervention from the divine? Do we not have stories of kings, prophets, and people who spoke with thunderous authority of the Almighty? This is not to besmirch the tradition of the Jews, Muslims, or Buddhists, for they have a proud and glorious history and experience with the divine, complete with their own oral traditions and holy books. Where is ours? It's time for the people of the African diaspora to tell their story. Isn't it time for our story of faith and experience with God be written on the pages of a leather-bound book found in the back of church pews? Our story is of struggle, hardship, conquest, deliverance, freedom, and triumph. Our ancestors are a chosen people, peculiar in many ways. We were blessed with rich culture and tradition. Our very existence is profoundly and reverently connected to a loving God. Our people did not escape the turbulent times of antiquity or the years that followed. We too endured great trial. We too were besieged with monumental challenges that forged a sturdy spiritual foundation. We too are a holy and chosen people. We are intimately familiar with God's deliverance, handiwork, and comforting embrace, especially when times were hard. Please understand, the evidence of God's hand on humanity is not only found in the pages of canonized scripture, but through a rich and plentiful oral tradition that undergirded the spiritual life of our ancestors. Our timeless oral traditions were shared on rickety porches, at worn kitchen tables, and around the fire at secret meeting places. Beyond the earshot of the slave master, our story latched to history and made its way to us in whispers and hushed tones and the moans of our freedom songs. Our story is a riveting account of harrowing events that engulfed the lives of a strong and enduring people. Indeed, our story plunges the soul into the depths of sorrow and pain, but the breath of our experience ultimately allowed our collective soul to soar in triumph. We are a kidnapped people whose forced and arduous journey saw our homeland disappear in the horizon. Yet, we survived an immense brutality. We survived rape, murder, beatings, and lynchings. We survived a subservient existence of bowed heads and gestures of acquiescence, accommodating the imagined superiority of bigots by fixing our gaze to the floor. Although our humanity and contributions were deemed diminutive, we nevertheless sculpted an enduring presence of strength on the world stage. No, A sea didn't part in our story. There were no plagues or swarms of locusts that paved our way to freedom. There were no angels of death that exacted vengeance on the firstborn of our captors. There were no mountains aglow with a divine presence. But our people had a restless and rebellious spirit that loosened physical and mental shackles. A condemned and captive existence buckled under the weight of our revolt. Yes, uprising and rebellion parted the sea of captivity. God's hand lifted our bowed heads, strengthened our weary backs, enabled us to look the bigot in his eyes, and turned our loathsome acquiescence to an imposing confidence. Yes, this is a story of our ancestors. It's a chronicle of their march toward freedom. No, our story isn't on the pages of a leather-bound book found in the back of church pews. It isn't a story canonized or given spiritual context by the church fathers of the past. It isn't a story given to hermeneutics, spiritual discernment, or scriptural interpretation. It's a story devoid of red lettering, prophetic pronouncements, and disputed texts. It's a story of a triumphant people whose arduous journey demonstrates the intervention of an awesome God. We're blessed to be descendants of a people that sprang from the cradle of civilization, where vast empires dotted the landscape of a sun-drenched continent, from the lands of the Wagadou, where gold was plentiful, to the Malinke kingdom of Mali, to the Songhai Empire. It is the lands of Africa by which humanity rose. It is the bountiful lands of Africa where man gazed into the heavens and discovered a connection to the divine. Religion and spiritual traditions were birthed there. And as the Nile Valley stretched from Ethiopia to Sudan to Kush or Egypt and empties into the Mediterranean Sea, our ancestors realized that the fragility of life was wholly dependent on the grace of God and the blessings He provides. And while slavery was the fate of millions of our African ancestors, while our homeland was pillaged, plundered, divided, and parceled off for the economic benefit of other nations, there emerged the children of this great people born in the Americas, whose hardship, toil, and suffering would not only stain a nation, but through their blood redeem the very soil upon which a United States would stand. I don't know why the story of our ancestors is not written on the pages of a leather-bound book found in the back of church pews. I do know the harrowing events that shape our past and blaze our future is found in the divine plan of a holy God. So let it be written. God has interceded on our behalf. The story of our ancestors is worthy of canonization. Our story is worthy of morning devotion and meditation. Where are the stories of our prophets, miracles, moral codes, and commandments? It is written on our hearts and found in our oral traditions. So where are our scrolls, gospels, Old and New Testaments, and missing books? They await the call of a divine assignment. When the doctrinal footnotes, translations, principles of interpretive studies, and concordances are written, our spiritual life will no longer be grounded in the story of other people. Instead, other people will ground their faith in our story. I believe our ancestors are worthy of such admiration and devotion. They've presented a compelling case of God's intercession. God smiled on them. God spoke to them. God's divine presence guided them. Will the holy book of our story ever be written? I don't know. But our story is worthy to be canonized and written on the pages of a leather-bound book found in the back of your church pew.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I hope you enjoyed our three-part series, The Movements and Voices of the African Diaspora. All three installments are available on our website, praisecharlotte.com. I want to send a shout-out to Tony Cradle Foster, a high school friend and soldier who is serving another tour in Afghanistan. Yes, folks, Tony and others listen to our show all the way in Afghanistan, and certainly I want to thank her for her service to our country and her fellow servicemen
and women who are serving to protect our homeland. Please, please come home safely. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We will talk with you next week.